grandmother once said that I had the eyes of a dreamer, and I just loved that so much. And I want to give that gift to you today to say that you too have the eyes of a dreamer. Yeah, it feels good, doesn't it? Because it affirms the truth that we are co-creators, that we are always dreaming about the possibilities and the potentiality of who we are and what we want to see in our lives, in our lifetime, in our world, in our families, in our communities. We are dreamers, all of us in this room. And really, all of humanity are dreamers. Not everybody's aware of that. But many are. And many good things are happening in our world. As much as you may hear about the doom and gloom, there's fabulous things happening in our world. People waking up everywhere all the time, right? And all of us waking up a little more each day. And into the truth of this third principle, that is that we are co-creators of our reality. We are co-creators of our lives and our world and ourselves in the process, are we not? Lynn Twist talks about three scarcity myths. You probably heard me talk about them before, because every time I look at prosperity, I come back to those as these foundational teachings in the soul of money. She says the three are: there is not enough, the myth that we live by that limits us. And the second is more is better. And the third is that's just the way it is. And interestingly, she says the last one is the most dangerous. So there is not enough, we know well what that is like. We know what it's like when we ourselves feel like there's not enough, right? When there's not enough, we cut off the flow. When there's not enough, we don't give, we hold back because we hold in fear. You know, so there's even that kind of posturing almost. And you can see how our lives sort of constrict and ourselves kind of constrict when we are in a place of believing that there's not enough. And when we are in the flow, the prosperous flow, we are open and easy and comfortable and free. We are prosperous, right? That's how we see prosperity and unity. It is about financial freedom and so much more. Most of us would define prosperity or our good as some combination of health and wealth, health of bodies and health of minds and health of relationships and fulfilling work and service and creative outlets and financial freedom. All of that is the goodness that we talk about so much. And then this other myth, more is better, you know, just this idea of that amassing more is better, which we know, you know, even though we are lured constantly to create a more comfortable and more luxurious, a more easy life with more stuff, that we know that the answer isn't necessarily to amass more stuff, that more is better is actually not a myth that we can sustain. And so we're at that, and that's a big part of why I like Lynn Twist's prosperity teachings, because she talks about it from a sustainability aspect as well. But let's get to this other one that she says is so dangerous. That's just the way it is. You almost can't say it without just sort of, you know, dramatically throwing up your arms, you know. Well, that's just the way it is, right? But you know that every great movement is a counter to that myth. You know, Gandhi overthrew the British Empire. Nobody thought that was possible. And everybody was said, well, that's just the way it is, that we are colonized. That's just the way it is. And this man said, no, I'm a co-creator. Do you want to co-create with me? Yeah, that's really the invitation, isn't it? For all these movements, the civil rights movement, the suffragette movement, the women's right to vote, and I could go on and name a billion, and so could you. But every one of those movements didn't buy into this myth that says, that's just the way it is, you know? We just have to succumb to that. We're helpless. We're powerless. No, because we are co-creators. That's the counter-truth. That's the truth that we stand on. So I just recently become acquainted with a co-creator who I want to share with you a little bit about. You might know her too. Her name is Greta Thunberg. Anybody know her? She's a young Swedish girl. Yeah, many of you do know her. Yeah. So Greta started her big journey of sort of coming out in the world with her work last November. But she's a well-known climate activist now. But just since November, by the way, nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize in March. She started at 8 finding out about climate change. And she couldn't believe it was real. In fact, she was pretty sure it wasn't real. In a way, she was a climate change denier at first, because she thought, if it's real, people would talk about it all the time. And it seems like nobody ever talks about it. She's like, well, it can't be real then. And so she actually went into a deep depression at the age of 11. She stopped eating and talking for some time. And at 15, she had an idea. She started to strike from school. So she just had a simple sign, and she'd sit outside the Swedish parliament, before the elections every day, with just skipping school for climate. And the idea that she, when people asked her, her parents, her teachers included, encouraged her to go back to school, and she said, well, what's the point, really, of that future when action needs to be taken now and nobody's taking the action? And so she's really stood in this, and she's been diagnosed with Asperger's, so she has this way of really delivering things in a very clear and concise way, a real common sense way that's shaken things up all around the world. In fact, the leader of OPEC, what does it stand for? Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. Mohammed Burkindo is the Secretary General, and he said that Greta is the single greatest threat to the fossil fuel industry. That's pretty incredible, isn't it? So obviously her movement took off. At first it was she and her little sign, and then it became a movement all over Europe, and kids all over Europe started striking from school on Fridays with the same idea. And they continue. She addressed the United Nations. She's given a TED Talk. She was on the cover of Time magazine in May. She's met with all kinds of dignitaries, including Pope Francis, who's really encouraging her to stay the course and continue to do this work, continue to be the co-creator that she is, to know and stand on that truth that I am a co-creator, and that's just the way it is, isn't okay. It's not acceptable. I will not accept the myth that that's just the way it is, because I know that I can co-create a different kind of world, and I must. And that's what she's doing, and it's caught on like wildfire. She just arrived on Wednesday to New York City to spread her message, and she arrived after a two-week journey across the Atlantic on a high-speed, zero-emissions yacht, because she refuses to fly and add more carbon to the atmosphere. The girl walks her talk. She doesn't eat meat, she doesn't eat dairy, she doesn't fly, she doesn't buy new stuff unless it's absolutely required. She's putting a lot of us to shame. I have to tell you, I had to really sit with it after I read what she was doing. I was like, wow, no more flying? That's tough. It's tough. This was her message, part of her message to the United Nations. You are not mature enough to tell it like it is. Even that burden you leave to us children. I don't care about being popular. She's insinuating that you all care more about being reelected and being popular. I care about climate justice and the living planet. What do you stand on like that? Is there anything that you stand on with that kind of passion, or is there anything that's brewing in your heart that has that kind of passion? Because whatever it is for us, whatever makes our heart break, really, in these times, these heartbreaking times, is a rich opportunity. Let's not get sad so much about the heartbreak, but see the possibilities in that. Because what happens when our hearts break? They break wide open, right? And when our hearts break wide open, abundant opportunities become available to us. We feel alive. We feel like there's potency in this. And so it is that then sends us forth as co-creators to co-create, then enjoy. Not in doom and gloom and sadness, but with hope and joy and possibility and potentiality, and knowing that truth is coming forth through us. When I hear Greta, I don't hear a child that she's serious, she's intense, but she's on purpose, and I don't hear a lack of hope. I hear I'm doing it. I'm co-creating. How great is my life? And that is true for all of us when we step into, and you know what, we are co-creating in every moment of every day. So it's not just the big movements that are created by us, but it's also the little things that happen in each day, right? The little ways in which we co-create when we are conscious of who we are. And it's these two first foundational principles that we really spring forth from when we move into co-creativity and bringing forth the good in our world and in our lives and materializing that. It's the two foundational principles that say, you know, if I know God is my source and it's all loving and everywhere present, then I know I'm safe. I know everything's okay. I know that there's not some other sort of evil entity out there out to get me, you know? Charles Fillmore said it best, evil is just a parasite. And as soon as the relationship with the host is severed, there is no life left for it. And so it's a temporal thing that comes along because we start to believe something is true, like a myth. Like one of these scarcity myths. And instead, when we wake up and we realize, oh, that's not the truth, that's not the abundant truth of who I am, that's not the I am that I am, the divinity that I know that I am, the power that I know that I have. For those of you who were here last week, you got to experience the waterfall from Iceland that Ron shared, and the before and after experience when he ran it again and had you really connect with your power, your divine power, and then to feel it. Wasn't that beautiful? To feel it, to be recognized, to recognize in consciousness. And so that's what our work is about. Over and over again, to become consciously aware of all that we are and all that is possible and how we can join forces to do amazing things. As Janice Stanfield sings, you will do amazing things. And those amazing things begin one step, one breath, one conversation, one moment at a time. So, co-creation is perfectly timed with Labor Day. Tomorrow is Labor Day. And we honor rest. We honor our work by resting on Labor Day, don't we? We honor our co-creativity and our creativity and our movement and our action by taking a day of rest, which is part of co-creativity. You know, the creator of the entire universe did rest on the seventh day. We can too. And that's an important part of it, right? The renewing and the recharging is an important piece of it. And when we honor our work, what is that? What is that work and that service in the world? David White, the poet, describes it, work, as a shaping and discovering, that we are shaping and discovering an opportunity that shapes and discovers. And really, what happens when we shape and discover whatever it is that we are creating in the world, whatever it is that we are birthing or midwifing or bringing forth? It changes us, right? We shape and discover ourselves. We begin to see more of that S, that big S self, because the second part of his definition is it is the place where the self meets the world. Work, service, co-creation, it's the place where the self meets the world. It's the place where that invisible power and truth of who we are begins to materialize in the world, begins to be offered out into the world with our gifts and our service and our talents and our presence and our kindness and our awakeness. All of those, all of you in this room. So often I think about when we're talking about making shifts in the world, I think about all of us in this room, you know, the 100 and some people in this room. It's enough. If one 16-year-old girl can be the greatest threat to the fossil fuel industry on the planet, I'm pretty sure that the 100 plus of us that have been doing this work for a long time can shift the world in a really positive way, aren't you? Together, just by being together today and singing together and meditating together and chewing on the message together, we make a change. That's a conscious choice to be a co-creator for you to say on Sunday morning, of all the places I could be, I'm going to go to Unity. And today I'm going to practice being a co-creator with other co-creators, and I'm going to be in that energy of co-creation. I'm going to be in that space of shifting and being and modeling and shaping and discovering that which we have come to be. So those are our choices that we make all the time. And how we make our choices and how we do this co-creative work is really at that seed point that Carrie sang about just a moment. The thoughts that we have are seeds. And that's what then works to grow into what it is that we are co-creating. We water those seeds with our feelings. And so thoughts and feelings are really the key elements of this co-creative principle, the key things that we work with. And so it is paying attention to our thoughts, paying attention to our decisions, paying attention to that which lights us up and that which drains us. We don't want to be doing the draining stuff, right? We want to do the stuff that lights us up. We want to think on that, allow that, receive that divine idea, and then water it with the feelings of joy and possibility, of love, of passion, of anticipation, of connection, of collaboration. It's not to say we shouldn't feel our feelings of sadness, depression, you know, whatever it is that is up. If those feelings are up, we feel those feelings, but we don't have to stay there. We just embrace them, feel them, move through them, let them go. That's why we do the water baptism that we just did, because the releasing is as important as the affirmation. If there's something that's standing in the way, that's blocking our path, we want to let it go so we can rise into the fullness and the truth of the co-creators that we have come to be. Yes? Yeah. Now, some say that it's a dog-eat-dog world, and that's just the way it is. And some say there are winners and there are losers, and, well, that's just the way it is. Did any of you watch the third round of the U.S. Open last night, the women's singles? It was a much-hyped match between Naomi Osaka, who was the number one seed, and this new tennis sensation, 15-year-old Coco Gauff. And so there was all this hype and all this pressure around it. And what happened was the number one seed, Naomi Osaka, beat Coco, and Coco cried. Can we have that picture, if we've got it, John? And this is what Osaka did. She hugged her. And she was really present with her. It wasn't a just, this is the way it is. This is the way it is usually at the end of a tennis mat. We shake hands, and then the winner gets to have their limelight and their spotlight time with the media and the crowd. But guess what Naomi Osaka did instead? She invited Coco to be a part of that interview. And Coco said, oh, no, I'm crying. And Osaka said, nobody cares that you're crying. Your fans want to hear from you. And it was so beautiful. And so they just shared their time together. And I tell you, the announcers afterwards, I mean, the game was fabulous. But nobody was really talking about that. They were all talking about the way that Naomi Osaka showed up. See, it's not so much just what we co-create, but how we co-create, in the spirit in which we co-create, with the spirit of sportsman or sportswomanship, right? It's a spirit of kindness and inclusivity and authenticity and humbleness. We can do that even in a competitive arena. We can bring that kind of co-creative spirit, and she did it for all of us. The announcer said, long after this match is over, this is what we'll remember. Not the play, but the after play. The way, the spirit in which this fine competitor, this talented tennis player, nurtured and mentored the younger one and included and brought her in. We always have that opportunity, right? To nurture and mentor one another no matter what our age, to be with each other, to be inclusive, to recognize that we're all doing hard work, that we're all working toward, you know, similar goals, that we're in this together, and to help each other in that process, not to just go off and be number one and be in the limelight. So where does that leave us? Where does that leave us in co-creation? I just want to make one other point, and that is that when we approach co-creation, when we actually activate that power in us and move toward an intentional co-creation, there's basically two different approaches. One is through intention, and the other is through inspiration. Now, through intention, we might decide, claim, give over to the universe, pray, and say, this is what I want. This is my heart's desire. This is what I'm upholding. This is what I'm affirming. This is what I'm creating a vision board about. I'm looking at Catherine, who's going to lead you through that next Sunday. Really wonderful way to create a board where you are looking at what it is over and over, the visual, and that's helping those seed thoughts and those feelings co-create what we want. And then maybe we listen along the way to Spirit's guidance as we move toward this. We always add, or something better, because we're in partnership with Spirit. Spirit may have something better in mind for us. We don't want to miss out on that. So that's sort of the intentional approach, the one with intention. And then there's the inspirational approach, where we get inspired. We receive a divine idea. We weren't even looking necessarily, but the superconscious mind just drops a divine idea into receptive us, and we say, oh, I hadn't thought of it that way. How interesting. Maybe I should do that. I'm going to follow that guidance. Now, then, of course, we're in that same dance of whether we take action, and then if we check in again and all of that, we go back into that same dance of the intentionality of following that. Now, the mystics would say, you know, completely surrender, give over, sit in meditation and prayer, and then if you're guided, you take action on that, and then back to prayer, and so on. So some of us live more in the inspirational camp, and some of us live more in the intentional camp, but I say they're both great. They're both very valid approaches to co-creation, and they intermix with one another. We can take a step and then listen. Is this the right way? Or we can listen and then take a step as we are guided, right? They're both really valid ways to co-create. And so no matter how we co-create, it's important that we know that we are co-creators, and the how is really just in the spirit, in the kindness, in the inclusivity, and all those things that I just mentioned that Naomi Osaka embodied for us. So we are indeed co-creators. We are indeed creating a beautiful world together. One of the things that we do at the board meeting every month is we do a visioning. And actually, Lisa encouraged me to guide that visioning so it's not just for the individual board members, but that it's for the community. And so each time we really vision on the community, and we let Spirit give us different symbols and take us on a journey, and it's really quite fun. And a couple of months ago, I think it was at least three of us got our receptacle to receive the good for our community was copper. It was a copper bowl or a copper vessel, but all of us got copper. It came up when I was out to dinner with some friends last weekend. They said, oh, well, copper's so valuable. Everybody's like crazy about copper pipes and copper wires and copper, you know, so it's about this valuable, this receptacle of great value. Isn't that beautiful to know that the leaders of your community are imagining for us as a community that we have this great receptacle of pricelessness, of value to receive our good? Not knowing exactly where it will come from, but trusting that it does and it multiplies over and over again because we bank on that truth as co-creators. We know this as our truth. This is who we are. This is who we've come to be. We are co-creators. And you know what? This is the way it is. That we are co-creators, that you and I are co-creators, that you all have the eyes of dreamers, and that we look about this world with those eyes of dreamers, that we cast upon those who we see and call forth the divine potential in them as well, that we connect with each other in the best ways that we can, heart to heart, and that we know for ourselves that we are healthy in body, in mind, in spirit, so we can do the work that Spirit has guided us to do. We are co-creators. We are co-creating our lives. We are co-creating our community, and we are co-creating our world. This is the way it is. Let's know that together. Together, this is the way it is. I am a co-creator. Yeah, I feel it. I believe it. I see it.